There's nothing more discouraging than feeling so incredibly small and little, and then having to go up to the platform and knowing you got to lift really heavy stuff, right? So I'm like, I didn't love being 49. I didn't, you know, I was only 49 for like maybe an hour, right? But I didn't like that. I didn't like seeing myself in the mirror because it didn't feel like me, and mentally it was really hard to, you know, feel confident in going to put like a heavy number on the bar and you're still like pulling your belt around your waist.
Hi, Jordan. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself, that would be great.
Yeah, thanks for having me. My name's Jordan. I've been a competitive Olympic weightlifter for the last decade, which is crazy. I represented Team USA at both the 2020 Tokyo Olympics and the 2024 Paris Olympics this past summer. Outside of sports, I'm a registered dietitian student, currently have my bachelor's in nutrition and dietetics, working on my master's in sports nutrition, and then I will start my dietetic internship this fall. All of that is required to be able to become a registered dietitian, and I'm really excited to start working with athletes and support them in their nutrition and performance in that capacity. And then I also am the brand owner of Her Athlete. I started this brand back in 2023. And yeah, it's just been really rewarding to watch it grow and kind of cultivate that community.
Now, could you say a little bit more about what Her Athlete is?
Yeah, so Her Athlete right now is just a platform where I can provide support to athletes through nutrition education and community. Eventually, I'd love to turn that into where I can practice my, you know, nutrition and dietetics and that be my dietetic practice. But for now, it's just centered on education and just having really a space where, you know, athletes can talk about topics that they may not have access to and feel comfortable talking with other people related to the female athlete experience and women's health. So yeah, it's I'm really proud of all the work that I've done with that and excited to watch it grow.
Awesome. I invited you because you are an experienced athlete in Olympic weightlifting and you have written a blog post that caught my eye. It was about your experiences with managing weight as an Olympic weightlifter in a sport where the weight matters because we have weight classes. Yeah, let's start with why did you have to or decided to manage your weight?
Yeah, I can take it all the way back to the beginning. When I first started weightlifting, you know, checking weight, being just aware of the number on the scale definitely wasn't a part of my everyday experience. It also wasn't part of my, you know, participation in sports. I was a competitive cheerleader and did a bunch of school sports. So going into weightlifting and that becoming like, you know, it's certainly prevalent in our sport. So going from that to caring about that I was able to manage it in the best way because when I first started out, I was sitting around 53, which was the current weight class. So basically my coaches were just like, yes, you know, step on the scale, whatever you weigh is whatever you weigh, and then go compete. So I was very fortunate in that my body just kind of sat at an already established weight class. But it wasn't until 2020 when we started the Olympic qualification process for that. My first senior international meet was in 2018, which was also the first qualifier for Tokyo. I competed as a 55. This was the first time as well where they launched the new weight classes.
Yes.
I PR'd, I did really well, and I still ended up at like 15th place, which was just kind of, you know, we realized in that moment this was going to be very challenging making the Olympic team as a 55. So that was the first time I really had to start processing my body weight and having to care about, you know, what I weigh and what that means in terms of participating at the international and elite level. So after that meet, my coach and I discussed that potentially going to 49 would be the most attainable route to the Olympics. And, you know, looking back, the qualification system was very different from the way it was for Paris. I believe it was the average of 4 events. And you possibly had 6 events that you could do, but they would take your average of 4 and rank you. So based on your average and where you rank.
And those are obvious points too. It was not some class or raw kilograms. It was raw points, wasn't it?
Yes. So it was very confusing because each event had a different multiplier. But all that to say, essentially every meet meant something, right? So your total, if you bombed or you didn't participate, it would impact your score. So we went about it very differently than we did for the 2024 qualifications. We essentially went in as many times as we could as a 49 and tried to do our best every time. You know, that was okay. I think I lucked out in a way where that decision to be a 49 was also, you know, post-puberty for me. I was in my early 20s. I was kind of growing into my adult woman's body. So my body was already changing and getting a little leaner. So the actual cut to the 49s wasn't that bad. Now, going into 2024, things were a lot different. The 55s wasn't an Olympic class. So I really only had one option, which was to go 49. And based on, you know, my experience in Tokyo and the outcome, I knew that I had to go to Paris. So that wasn't an option for me. I was going to go as a 49. Now, it got a lot harder as I got older and the qualification systems were changing for the better. At least in my case, I didn't have to go to every meet and I could decide, you know, I could train through this as a 55 or, you know, just weigh in and, you know, check the box.
What I'm hearing is you try to balance the performance side. So where you realistically have a chance to actually go to the Olympics versus what your body and your performance would be best at. So and these were different in your case for different reasons for both Olympics. The first one was the qualification system and how it was run. The second was that the weight classes were so far apart. So you really had no choice because the next one was 49 then 59. So 10 kilo difference. It's
big and I'm 4'11", so I'm very tall. And even as a 55, I never really filled out that class. I think I always weighed in around like 54, just walking weight. So it didn't seem like a possibility to compete as a 59.
All right. So you made the decision you will be cutting. You cut to some events, not to others. For Paris, for Tokyo, you had to be 49 for all events, would you, for Tokyo?
Yes. I think there was one event that I went in as a 55, but the gold events, gold and silver, I tried to go in as a 49.
Right. So see, even that each Olympic, the system is so different and athletes and coaches have to adapt. This alone is super stressful because you can't really plan 10 years ahead. Okay, we will have this lifter end up here for the Olympics. It's just, we don't know what will happen here and we have to still get there. So that's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. And you know, every time they change the weight class or they decide what classes won't go, you know, this impacts real people's lives and you need time to adjust, ideally, right, to do it safely. You need time to either go up or go down. And sometimes the system isn't very forgiving. Sometimes world events happen and you only have 3 years till the next Olympics. So it's certainly kind of crazy. We would just wake up one day and find out what the classes are and what our opportunities are. So
all right, so looking back, you had first Olympics in Tokyo, then in Paris. How do you think it all went in terms of your weight management and preparation for the Olympics and so on?
Yeah, so after Tokyo, like I said, wasn't very difficult to cut down to 49. Sometimes I would just walk up onto the scale already 49. So I was sitting much differently. But going into Paris, this was the strongest I'd ever been. You know, I totaled 200 to make the Tokyo Olympics, but I also totaled 200 to make the Paris Olympics. And I did that with a 4-for-6 performance, knowing that I could do more. My body was so much more stronger going into Paris than Tokyo, which meant I was carrying more muscle. So cutting was definitely getting harder. And of course, I'm getting older. So there was that physical, you know, side to it, but also emotionally and mentally. Every competition that I agreed to go 49 for, you know, that's at least 8 weeks where my life is changed and is centered around making this 49 kilo body weight, right? I'm a big foodie. One of my love languages is cooking for my friends. So that's something that I couldn't do for 8 weeks, or even within my own household, like having separate meals for my partner. So eventually it just kind of got to be like, you know, this is a lot. It's not that exciting anymore. But, you know, I needed to go to Paris. This was a big goal for me. So of course I was going to continue doing it. And then after Paris, a big contributing factor for me deciding that I may retire after Paris was the weight cutting. I couldn't see myself participating in weightlifting and continually cutting to 49. It's just not how I wanted to experience sport anymore. And it really was, I think, led to a big chunk of my burnout towards the end of that qualification period. So I had all the intention of the world to retire and move on. But when the new weight classes came out back in this December, I felt like a little spark in me like lit, and I was excited to potentially just experience this sport in my own body and not have to do such extreme measures every time I want to go out and lift and compete. So yeah, that's just kind of where I am now. And it's so far, it's been really, really great. So
is it an announcement that you will participate in the quad? You will try to qualify for Los Angeles?
I am taking it 1 month at a time.
Got it.
Definitely not making any commitments. This could just be like a year run for me. I don't know, right? I just know that leaving Paris and leaving my career essentially just felt very unsatisfying, knowing that I was so strong. And yet every time we got close to competition, I had to put myself and my body through a not so ideal routine at this point that I felt like was really taking away from my performance and also just my enjoyment in the sport. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like a comeback to like Olympic qualifications, but it's me healing, I guess.
Right. Sounds good. You have been pretty quiet about the whole process of cutting weight and so on. There were athletes who were literally posting daily how they are going in the weight class.
Mm-hmm.
But you never done it. You were pretty private about it. So I was wondering why you made this decision.
Yeah. So again, I started this sport as a youth and junior lifter. So I really looked up to the older athletes, especially the ones that I could see myself in. And we had similar body types, so similar weight classes, but they always would post things related to cutting weight. And it always made it seem like that's what you needed to do to get to that level, which was a goal of mine, is to be in their position. And when I finally got to this place, it was important to me that I wasn't conveying that type of message. Because yes, well, the best option for me was to cut to 49 to make 2 Olympic Games. But there are a lot of great elite lifters who don't have to manipulate body weight to perform really well. And so I really wanted to protect the like young girls who would be looking at my Instagram. And Instagram's such as, you know, it's just a snapshot in your life, right? So it wouldn't tell the whole story. I also didn't want being in this position. I get asked this all the time, like how to cut weight, tips for doing it. How do I look like you? How do I perform like you? And I don't understand why people think that just because you look a certain way that they are going to have the tools to help you look a certain way or perform a certain way. So it was really also to protect my own space. I didn't like when people would ask me to write them a meal plan or all this. How do I look like you? I've been doing this for 10 years and, you know, this is just my physiology, my choices, my experiences. And I just wanted to keep that to myself and do that to protect myself in this journey. But yeah, that's what the big reasons why I kept it pretty private. It wasn't until I started to open up a little bit more through Her Athlete and kind of expressing myself through dietetics and as a nutrition professional that I felt a little bit more comfortable sharing those experiences. Because I do think a big reason why people always ask is because there is a lack of support and a lack of accessible information to do these things. Because in reality, athletes are going to do it anyways. If it helps them make teams, they're going to figure out how to cut weight, right? And I think that's probably a larger issue. We just don't have enough information based on actual weightlifting and not just like weight class sports. I think there's a lot of protocols for, you know, boxing, MMA, which have 24-hour weigh-in. So it's very different from weightlifting. There's not a lot of information on like the impacts on female athletes over long time cutting. And there's just no general consensus on like the best ways to do it and the best ways to protect our athletes. So I think that's definitely like a larger issue and why I think a lot of people are just so desperate even to ask a stranger like, hey, how do I do this? You know?
Yes. Do you think you would be stronger if you wouldn't have to cut?
Yeah, I'm definitely my strongest during training when I can just be whatever my body wants to be to keep me healthy. And it's really hard to know that you're, you know, especially in my case because I am an athlete at this elite level. I have been for several years, and I will do things that are kind of risky for my health because I have these performance goals. But I also am a dietetic student, so I understand the potential health and performance implications that this could have. So it's definitely challenging knowing that I'm doing this to my body for the sake of, you know, my goals. But I think really where we could start and what I'm hoping to continue advocating for is these are extreme measures that can be done safer. There are safer ways to do it, but they should only be used when you have to, right? This shouldn't be something we normalize, especially within our youth and junior population. I was at a national event here in the US, and there was this maybe 13-year-old girl, and she is crying on a scale while her coach is cutting her hair off for a youth national event. This was several years ago, but that image has just stuck with me. And I think we can do so much better. And that's at least what I am trying to do, just as someone who has this platform and has this space to speak on things, that we protect our athletes better and we don't normalize such extreme practices that have no implication on peak performance. We actually know we would do better if we weren't just cutting weight, and we would be stronger if we didn't do such extreme things.
I wanted to ask you going back to your experience, what do you think went well in the whole process? You have two quotes to reflect on: what went well and what went not so well, and maybe the lessons you have for yourself or for our future athletes you will be helping.
Well, compared to my approach to Tokyo, one experience, right? We understood what it required to make an Olympic team. We understood the qualifications better. But it's very privileged of me to say this, but to have a support system for the athlete is, I think, really important, and what made this second experience a lot better, I guess, or safer. You know, I work with a dietitian. I work with a psychologist. My coach is very, open and empathetic in sharing that space with these other healthcare professionals to make those decisions. We work with our performance director and planning things well in advance. We're looking at the whole 18 months and not just the next 12-week cycle. You know, I'm getting DEXA scans, I'm getting blood draws, I am talking to my therapist weekly. So I think just having that support system and leaning on it was definitely made the experience better. And I felt like everyone in that circle was advocating for my health. So if it ever had gotten to the point that it'd be harmful for my, health or, whatever, I felt like they would 100% choose the human version, the person that I am, and not just the athlete. So I would encourage anyone who is deciding to, make these choices. Hopefully it is for something that is this is the only option, and it's to make, a big team, and you've already gone through puberty and it's within a safe amount of kilos to cut, that you still at least have this support system instilled to advocate for you and to just help keep it all as safe as possible.
All right. That's an important message.
That's the thing that I want to advocate too, is that when you choose to, manipulate your body weight, whether it's to go down or up, it's a big decision. There's a lot of things that go into that. And I think because we normalize talking about body weight, and, unfortunately, it's a big part of our identity as athletes. I'm announced Jordan Delacruz, 49 kilo lifter. I think we kind of forget, those are big life choices that we make as athletes, and it goes so much deeper than just the physical stuff. When going up a weight class, there's a lot of, mental barriers and challenges with that too, especially for female athletes. We live in a society that favors leanness, so it's so much more deeper than just, keep eating and keep squatting. I think we just need to recognize these are heavy decisions that we make, and we shouldn't make them lightly. And I don't think we should be making them at all as a developing athlete. I think, in my opinion, I think developing athletes need to just be in their body that they need to be to not only develop in sport, but continue developing as a human and continue through puberty. So yeah.
Right. Do we want to go specifically into the risks that go with cutting weight specifically? And you can also speak to the other spectrum, so putting on weight.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, we don't have a lot of research that shows exactly what these adverse symptoms are. But I think over the long term, there's a lot of things that maybe go unknown or unspoken for. So at least, you know, we know that chronic low energy availability does have both health and performance implications that impact us. I think they impact our non-athlete self. And it's really hard for athletes to like prioritize that, especially when you identify as an athlete. Because in reality, we're going to live our life mostly in our non-athlete self than we will in our athlete self. So some of these choices and extreme things that we're doing, we may not see the issues with it now, but we may see it later. And we know that there is research out there on REDS and being in this low energy availability, mostly in endurance sports, but we do know it exists. And I think that we could assume the same thing for weightlifting or any weight class sport where you are having to put yourself in these like chronic caloric deficit periods over and over and over. And most athletes, we do this for at least a decade. We do this for a long time. So yeah, I think that's definitely like we need to understand those risks for cutting weight. Risk for going up a weight class. I think if you do it very quickly, let's say you need to go up a weight class and your next competition is in like 12 weeks, you're potentially putting your body under quite a bit of load without your joints being ready for it. Or, you know, you don't have the muscle per se. Maybe you weigh that the next weight class, but is it muscle to support the totals you're trying to put on your body all of a sudden? So maybe just the risk of trying to do it too quickly and not allowing athletes to have that time and even a potential dip in performance until we finally get to that point where they can start to accelerate because their body is ready for it.
And it's all relationship with food and self-image, you know, how you see yourself in your new body, whether it's leaner or whether it's heavier, and then how long will you stay there? Where is your natural? You will have to go back, whether from being very lean or, you know, how you navigate that.
Yeah, like I said, it's a big decision because it involves so many complex systems mentally, emotionally, and physically. Physically, you may have to buy a whole new wardrobe. Can you afford it? Do you have access to that? You may also be having to redefine what you appear to feel like pretty and like, you know, you have to define, you know, how you look in the mirror. It's just so many different things. Specifically in my case with going down, you know, obviously getting leaner is like society's like, yay. But for me, I felt like a shriveled up version of myself. And I actually had to communicate to people, especially in Paris. I was like, don't comment that I look little. Don't say that I look small. Actually kind of like beef me up a little bit, because there's nothing more discouraging than feeling so incredibly small and little and then having to go up to the platform and knowing you got to lift really heavy stuff. Right. So I'm like, I didn't love being 49. You know, I was only 49 for like maybe an hour, right? But I didn't like that. I didn't like seeing myself in the mirror because it didn't feel like me. And mentally, it was really hard to, you know, feel confident in going to put like a heavy number on the bar and you're still like pulling your belt around your waist. But yeah.
Do you have lots of people commenting on your body? Did you going to Paris or Tokyo?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a female athlete. It's a very unfortunate reality, but, you know, I think people oftentimes were they were complimenting me maybe because I was getting leaner. You could see my abs. I look shredded, right? But in my mind, I'm like, you don't know what I'm doing. You don't know that I'm going to bed hungry. You don't know that I feel so fragile on the bar right now. So yeah, I mean, I think any comment that I got maybe was meant to be positive, but because they didn't know what was going on behind the scenes, like I didn't take that as a positive thing, you know? I also don't think you should be commenting on bodies anyways.
Let's try to sum it up. Thank you for being open, first of all. What would be your ideal scenario in terms of weight management in Olympic athletes across? So from young and from recreational all the way to elite, how do you see from your experience and from education you are working through now, how ideally we should be thinking about it?
Yeah, well, starting out from a large perspective, definitely having more research, specifically just in Olympic weightlifting, would be great. Having more information allows us not just, you know, within each national federation, but collectively within the IWF, what can we all agree on that this is like safe protocol guidelines for athletes? So having that information, I think, would be ideal, right? And then more on a narrow scope, I think, you know, continuously advocating for a better support system, which does require education from, you know, for coaches, for parents, because they do have a really large influence. Not everyone's going to have access to a nutrition professional or a therapist. I understand that. But if parents and coaches are more educated and understand how to best advocate for the athlete, then I think that's going to actually solve a lot of the crazy stuff that we see already. And then potentially just having more education. So this is something that, like, I'm trying to do is, you know, what do we know that has helped and how can we better distribute that information throughout all tiers in our sport? You know, it's for the U.S., top six are the ones that are heavily funded and have access to dietitians and to the support staff, essentially. I think it's changing, but, you know, for a while, the development athletes didn't have access to these things. And how are they going to get to this top six or this elite level without that kind of information and support? So I think having more trickle down of impact and access to education helps athletes and coaches and parents make better and informed decisions for the athlete.
Sounds good. How far are we? What changes did you see through your career so far? Are we heading in a good direction? Are we getting there?
I mean, I think so. At least on like my social media, I'm seeing more of the top athletes speak on fueling for performance and don't call it a cheat meal because food is nourishment. And, you know, we don't see so many athletes showing what their weight cuts are like. And I don't know if that's just because it's my social media and I don't want to see that kind of stuff. But I do think athletes in general are becoming better advocates for this. And like I said, within like the U.S. at least, our new NTP program does have our developmental athletes. They have access to our dietitians. And I know our dietitian is working closely with like our level two coaches. And there's just more like opportunities to learn. Now, is every coach and parent doing that? I don't know. That may be a slower progression, but I think the information is starting to like at least be there for those that are interested. I'm always going to be an advocate of fueling your bodies. In my experience, being leaner does not mean that you are stronger, which is, I think, a hard concept to really accept and apply in your everyday life. I know, like, you know, body image and that kind of stuff still is something that I deal with. So I just want to continue advocating that like fueling your body is going to not only allow you to be stronger, but also for you to continue doing the sport that you love for a very long time. Weightlifting's unique to where you can do this till you're very, very old. You can do this for a long time. And to you also, having a fueled body means less injuries and just better mood. So you're going to enjoy the sport for longer as well. So I'm always going to continue advocating for fueling for performance. And I hope that my experience is helpful for people to kind of see and reflect on in their own life and help them make decisions moving forward.
Thank you. Two short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
My favorite lift is the snatch. I think it's the most athletic movement you could possibly do, but I'm more successful in the clean and jerk. So it's just clean and jerks are so heavy, but snatch is fun. Oh, yeah, I don't know.
I love it. All right. Where people can find you when they, if they want to follow or see what you're up to or learn more.
Yes. So my Instagram is my name, Jordan, with three N's, underscore 14. I made that Instagram when I was 14 years old. And then you can follow Her Athlete on Instagram. And you can also check out my website, www.herathlete.org. There I have more like long form content. So blogs, free resources, and then also a mentorship program that I've started. So you can find me there. And yeah, I mean, I'd love to connect and chat with you guys if you ever have questions.
Awesome, Jordan. Huge pleasure. Thank you for today.
Yep. Thank you for having me.